Today, 7 days to stop 1984. Martin North, John Adams, in the Interest of People with Robbie Barwick. Hi, folks.
Hello, Martin. How are you today?
Yeah, pretty good. Very important show, this. It's actually going out on both What the World and In the Interest of the People, because we have a very short period of time to deal with something which is really critical.
The reason why we've come today with Robbie is to talk about this totalitarian piece of legislation that the Albanese government is trying to ram through the parliament about so-called misinformation and in terms of disinformation. And the reason why this is important is that the government is attempting to suspend free speech in the alternative media, which is you and I, and including Robbie. And over the last 6 years, Martin, as we've been doing shows on the economy, on the cash ban, on bail-in, on ASIC, on white-collar crime, we have been promoting a whole set of information, facts, narratives, which is completely contrary to the mainstream media. And so the ruling elite in this country do not like when independent voices go on platforms like YouTube or X or Facebook, etc., and actually promote a completely different message to the Australian people. And so this issue of misinformation, disinformation, it's not a Australia phenomena. Only in the last fortnight, we saw senior officials of the European Union say that the top policy priority in Europe is to combat misinformation, disinformation. Now, Martin, I will say, in fairness, there are personalities, there are organized efforts, even by some governments, both in the West but also in the East, to trick people into believing something that is not true. I mean, there is nefarious players trying to confuse people, particularly in the lead up to elections. So that sort of activity is happening, and I think it's fair to say that we should call that out. And I don't think we should welcome that sort of organized campaign in Australia. But the risk of this legislation, if it gets into the wrong hands, and we've got Robbie here to explain the ins and outs of the legislation, it can do serious harm to silencing people like you and I, where we have pushed the establishment on so many areas. And just to go on the cash ban, we were called conspiracy theorists for more than 9 months by Aaron Patrick of the Financial Review, who just said that our arguments about the reason why the cash ban was completely illegitimate from a public policy point of view, he just said we were completely nuts. And we were correct all along, and our arguments prevailed, and we were able to stop Australians going to jail for using cash. And so the cash ban is one of those examples where the alternative media is so critical. You know, before we hand it over to you and Robbie Martin, dare I say, I think ASIC would say that a lot of my analysis, a lot of these shows that we've done on in the Interest of the People about ASIC and their lackluster performance, they would call our content misinformation and in terms of disinformation. And so we cannot have the minister, a bunch of bureaucrats controlling what citizens say and what they communicate, particularly when we want to criticize the economy, the government, the banking system, the financial markets. We need to be free to have open and robust debate. And that's why this legislation has to stop. And the reason why we've called this show 7 Days to Stop 1984 is this piece of legislation has gone to a Senate inquiry. The government only wants 7 days to allow for submissions. So we are recording here on Monday, the 23rd of September. So in 7 days' time, so Monday next week on the 30th of September, that's when submissions are supposedly in. And so for something that is so fundamental to human rights and in the course of freedom and political discourse, to only allow the Australian people 7 days to raise their opposition, it's clear to me, Martin, that the fix is in. Labor wants this to go through. Labor is being directed by the Biden administration in the United States and the European Union in Europe to push this draconian piece of legislation through. And they don't want the Australian people to rise up against this law. So we're doing this show to warn the public. And we'll get Robbie to provide some instructions as to how people can get engaged in the next 7 days to stop Albanese with this piece of legislation, and so that we can continue to be free in this country.
So let's, I think, look at the meaning of serious harm in some detail. Robbie, I'd like you to take us through this, and I'll put the serious harm definition up on the screen now.
Okay, so look at the wording here, which Martin has highlighted. The first one talks about harm to an electoral or referendum process. Now, what does that mean? We're just on the back of the voice referendum, which started off with, by according to the opinion polls, majority public support as an idea. By the time of the vote, it was well and truly trounced. 60% at least of Australians voted against it. It didn't even win the state. I think its one hope was to win the state of Victoria, and it didn't. And what did the Albanese government do the whole time that they started losing in the polls? They blamed the whole thing on misinformation and disinformation. When in fact, Australians who participated in that remember that there wasn't a huge backlash to the loss of the voice referendum. There were real questions that were being asked about how this would work constitutionally, which the government did not want to engage in. And they just dismissed all that as misinformation, disinformation. So this is a danger where with this power, they can turn off that debate electronically, essentially, with the way this law will work in practice. The other thing I'm concerned about in terms of when they talk about the electoral process, in 2016, when Donald Trump won the US presidential election unexpectedly, the Democrats turned around and spent the next 4 years blaming that on Russian election interference. And then there were big investigations in that, and it just wasn't true. What they didn't want to own up to was the fact that the American establishment has so betrayed the American voter that even blue-collar voters who should have nothing to do with it, nothing in common with a billionaire like Donald Trump, but blue-collar voters in the Midwest had just decided they were sick of everything. They were prepared to vote for something that someone that sounded so different. And instead of acknowledging what their policies had done to erode America's standing over time, the Democrats turned around and blamed it on misinformation, disinformation, right? And sourced it from Russia. So this is a source of a lot of this agenda right now, actually that. A lot of countries have adopted that kind of narrative. And it's a way for the establishment to absolve themselves of the impact their policies have had on the people. So that's what that refers to. The next one that needs to be highlighted is harms to the efficacy of preventive health measures. Now, I mean, we're on the tail end of COVID and all the measures to do with COVID, right? So what this would do, and this is the one that the government is probably more insistent about than most other features of this, they highlight examples of misinformation, disinformation in COVID. Now, I know there was misinformation, disinformation in COVID from people that were resisting what the government was trying to do. I can give you examples of that, but I also know, and it's very well established now, that it wasn't, the misinformation, disinformation wasn't one-sided. There were big claims made by governments in Australia and around the world that just weren't true. And so by saying preventive health measures, they would shut down any public debate, which is a big debate now, and public opinion has largely shifted now about things like lockdowns, vaccine mandates, etc. This would give them the power to shut down that debate on social media. Now, there's the bulky one there is the vilification of groups, and they name all these different groups. My concern with on that sort of score is, I'll just give you one example that's very topical right now. And whether you take whatever position you take on it, just understand that I'm highlighting because it's topical. We have a situation in Australia where there's a lot of feeling about the war in Gaza, and there's a lot of public protests about the war in Gaza. And there are people that are, and politicians especially, that are labeling those protests anti-Semitic. Now, what that means by definition is they're saying that those protests are an attack on them and their group. And if that is how this is interpreted by the government of the day, that's just one example. That kind of debate about that war, which is the whole world is debating, could be shut down on social media. That's an example. And then the big, beautiful one, which we three relate to the most, is the one that's caught significant attention, which is this question of imminent harm. And that that you've got to emphasize what that means. That means harm before the fact. It hasn't happened yet. Imminent harm to public confidence in the banking system or financial markets. So no criticism of the banks, no criticism of the stability of the financial system, and the kind of commentary that we've engaged in over the years on things like bail-in of deposits and what that means, the motivation for the cash ban. John just mentioned ASIC. What are we saying about ASIC? Here's ASIC is the policeman of the financial system, and we're saying the policeman is not doing its job. So the public can have no confidence in the cop, and if the public can have no confidence in the cop, that will shake the public's confidence in the actual system. This is a very important debate we've been in the middle of. John has turned Parliament upside down on this question. This law could be construed in such a way as to shut that down. This is a screenshot of your channel with John, Interests of the People, that I've pulled up on my computer. Just to highlight headlines like this, and this is from 4 years ago, headlines like Australia's banks are preparing to bail in retail bank deposits. Now, bail-in is the policy where to prop up banks, governments can actually confiscate deposits or transfer deposits into equity shares in a failing bank. But suddenly you don't have your savings anymore, or you've lost a big chunk of your savings. You've had a haircut of your savings. Now, this is something that will really damage confidence in the financial system. It truly will damage the use of bail-in, truly will damage confidence in the financial system. In fact, this was acknowledged last week in the Financial Review. We did a segment on our show about this because the Financial Review and the government and the APRA, the regulator, is finally saying 5 years after we started highlighting the danger of bail-in bonds, what are these things called bail-in bonds, and how they were held by retail investors in Australia, the APRA has said they're going to phase out bail-in bonds. And the commentary in the Financial Review was because any use of bail-in bonds will damage confidence in the system, exactly what we were saying 5 years ago. But when we were talking about bail-in 5 years ago, we were called by this government disinformation. The government absolutely denied everything we were saying about bail-in. Not only did you guys talk about bail-in on your show, but you actually highlighted the imminent danger based on the behavior of the banks that this could happen. That would be construed under this kind of power as causing imminent harm to confidence in the banking system. I got a few, there's a few other headlines. Deposit insurance is no protection against bail-in. You did that, you got 8,400 views on that 4 years ago. There's an example that would be deposit insurance is the number one thing the government site says, oh, see, you don't have to worry about things like bail-in, your deposits are insured. You prick the bubble on that, and that would be construed in such a way. So these are just a few examples of how this law would actually work in practice. And so there's a few other things that we can say about it, but before we go on, the most important point of tonight's discussion is it's essential, if there's only 7 days, that people make a submission to this inquiry now. I'm sure if you're watching this show, you're very concerned about what we're talking about. You cannot be passive about this. You must exercise that concern by making a submission to this inquiry. There's going to be, you know, half a dozen senators on the Environment and Communications Legislation Committee that look at that participate in this inquiry. A bunch of other senators actually get the right to participate as non-members, as participating members. They will see from the number of submissions they receive just how worried and concerned the Australian public are by this bill. But I'll tell you why it's 7 days. And just indulge me for a minute, because we've all been part of a very significant public engagement process over the last 5 or 6 years. And you can see how that has worked. And this bill has broken all records in terms of public engagement. So in 2017, when our party first caught wind that the government had a bill that could be used to bail in deposits, The first, it was August 2017, an exposure draft was released. We had 2 weeks to get submissions to that exposure draft, and we generated 250 submissions in 2 weeks. And then we compared our submission, the number of our submissions to the average number of submissions on an exposure draft of an economics bill, and the average number was 30. And we realized we'd done pretty well getting 250 in 2 weeks. 2 years later, the cash ban law was released under similar circumstances. This time we all knew each other and we all worked together on this. And we called for submission to that exposure draft that was released in August. And again, there was 2 weeks for submissions. We later had to do a Freedom of Information request to find out how many submissions there were to that exposure draft. I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like between 4,000 and 6,000 submissions to that exposure draft, right? This was enormous compared to even what we'd generated 2 years earlier on bail-in. Well, this bill that we're talking about was initially put up last year in 2023, and it had an exposure draft process. That exposure draft broke all records. There was something like 23,000 submissions made to the exposure draft of this bill in 2023. And it was and of course they were 99.9999% to infinity negative against this bill. Because of that, the government actually announced it was backing away, going back to the drawing board and re-looking at the whole question. In the meantime, the communications minister, Michelle Rowland, went to the UK earlier this year, signed a memorandum of understanding with the Brits to actually bring in work together on combating misinformation and disinformation. Now, just as a quick aside, if you are a Brit, you live in the UK, and most people around the world would have heard by now, people in the UK are now being sent to jail solely for social media posts. Now, the social media posts may be unsavory, but it's just words. And they're now getting 3 and 4 year jail sentences for that, right? So this bill is not about that, but that's the nature of free speech in Britain at the moment that we signed a memorandum of understanding with our minister. Our minister visited the European Union to talk to those good folks about combating misinformation, disinformation. And then they've come back, they've reintroduced the law, they've tweaked it a little bit, added things like what we just read out about imminent harm to the financial markets and banking system. My goodness, I mean, that's improving the bill. So they've added that. But now they're saying they're trying to do this transparently, but by their actions of only allowing the actual process of true engagement to be 7 days, and then the actual inquiry to only be 2 months, shows you their true intentions. They're just going through the motions on engagement because they intend to ram this through. So you have to make a submission. It can be one sentence, it can be 10,000 pages. Every submission is valid. It's the number of submissions that's important. I've got on the screen here, Martin, if you can show that, but we'll put the details below. Just have this is, if you want to write this down while we're talking, you need to make a submission to this address, Senate Standing Committee on Committee and on Environment and Communications, PO Box 6100, Parliament House, Canberra, ACT 2600. Email it to ec.sen@aph.gov.au. So we'll put the link below. But it's vital before next Monday you make a submission as a citizen, identify yourself, and denounce this law. Express your opposition to the law. What I'm also calling for is add in your submission demands for public hearings, because if it's only a two-month inquiry, the report's back in 2 months, I suspect they've got no plans for public hearings. If they had public hearings, they'll be swamped. Demand it. Demand public hearings, and let's see if we can actually extend this inquiry into a proper inquiry just by the actual engagement of the public in a process they don't want the public to engage in.
Thanks, Robbie. And just worth underscoring one other important thing, the way this would actually work in practice if this legislation came in would be that the social media platforms would be liable, and they'd be fined significantly if any of the content that is listed here showed up on their platforms. Now, the quickest way they can do that is to either ban it completely or indeed detune the algorithm, so even if you put posts up, you'd never see them. So that's the point there. Now, the other point, Robbie, is who determines what truth is actually is the critical question here, right? Because effectively, the judge and jury on what is defined as serious harm is the government, and they also allow universities also to be free to be able to not be controlled by this legislation. So for some reason, it's only non-governmental entities like ourselves, you know, people who actually have a genuine interest in trying to make the Australian society better, who are actually being caught by this legislation. That's really important to think through who is determining truth.
And you missed the one, the other category you missed out, Martin, is mainstream media. Mainstream media is also exempt from misinformation and disinformation, being classified as misinformation and disinformation. And so the reason I think they're targeting, well, I know, there's no doubt about it. The establishment political parties around the world, especially around the Western world, are losing their grip completely because they're not delivering for the public. If you, I don't know if anyone's followed election, the French politics lately. There's been a coup in France. They lost an election and the president has installed a government from the losing side because he just won't tolerate the other side, right? And that's a so-called Western liberal democracy. I mean, they're losing their grip on power, and so they are trying to control information that they blame for the loss of their grip on power rather than change their own policies. And what social media is, as it has developed technologically so far, is a way to disseminate ideas very quickly that the government and the mainstream media can't control. Before social media, the way you had to get out ideas, there was two ways to get out ideas. You got covered in the mainstream press. They were the gatekeepers. So those billionaires like Kerry Packer and Rupert Murdoch, they had structures that they decided who was worthy of coverage or not. And good on you, good luck for you if you got coverage, right? If you really felt strongly enough about your issue and you couldn't get coverage, you had to go to all the expense of finding ways to, like our party did, publish your own publication, get it printed, get lots of copies printed and distribute them. That was a very expensive process and it took weeks and months to get your message out. Social media came along and suddenly we can do the kind of post that the three of us were doing in the cash ban campaign in 2019 because that really struck a chord, that campaign. And I know you and I did one post early on in the first few weeks that had about 180,000 views, yep, right, on the cash ban. The Interests of the People show often, you know, 50, 60,000 views on your regular shows. That is real. What we were able to do with those views to mobilize people to act defeated the cash ban. We stopped the government bringing in a bill using social media, using YouTube, right? So they don't like that. So what this, now in the past, an authoritarian government, if they wanted to shut you down from disseminating information outside the mainstream media, they'd come to where you're printing your publication, they'd break the printing press. Problem solved. Well, they're not, they can't do that. They don't have to do that now. What they've got with this bill is they empower ACMA, the media regulator, so-called, with the power to order the social media companies to turn it off. And what will happen is the social media companies will preemptively know what will be considered misinformation, disinformation, based on the government's definitions of what that is. And you'll even look like you're allowed to post. I mean, we've all sort of had experience with shadow banning at various stages. You'll look like you're able to post, just no one can hear it. And the scene I think of is, if you've ever seen the movie Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, he's on a hotel balcony, and there's a double glazed sliding glass door, and he's showing that they couldn't hear the crime being committed on the other side, and he pulls the door in front of him, and he's screaming, and as soon as he pulls the door in front of him, he's still screaming, no one can hear him, right? That's what this will do to the ability of people to disseminate information, and that's why the government wants it. And then the rest is just the oldest story in the book. Free speech has been debated for centuries, literally for centuries. And the conclusion from wise heads is censorship doesn't work. Yes, free speech brings dangers. Yes, lies, harmful lies can be disseminated. But the greater danger is empowering authorities to shut down free speech. And that's why in 1948, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and Article 19 of that declaration says, quote, everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media, regardless of frontiers. That's in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Tell me how this bill in any way conforms to that Universal Declaration that Australia is party to.
Yeah, good point, Robbie. And, you know, you can argue, I think, that this is emanated from the political system failing because politicians have failed and they're almost trying to sort of build a buttress around the old way of doing things and the old way of thinking. But in so doing, they are effectively putting more controls. So, you know, we called this 1984, and it's worth just reflecting why we called it 1984. That book, George Orwell wrote it, was about a society that was completely controlled because the information was controlled, because the ideas that people inhabited were controlled, and they were defined by the government, and anything that was not defined by the government was not allowed. And that is the concern that I have about the way that this evolves, because you can see the foundations of control being put in place, you know, removal of ideas that aren't actually in line with the government, the control of transactions by taking away cash, introduction of a central bank digital currency to control, you know, the way that money flows. All of those things are elements of control. And the problem I have is that those in power seems willing to adopt this 1984 mode of engagement, and we need to resist it.
Absolutely. That's what we have in common. That's what we've been collaborating on, and we've been having results. I mean, that's the other point to consider, which John can elaborate on, but you know, we've actually turned the political debate upside down in many respects, not least this last fight on ASIC. And exposed that the emperor's got no clothes. And so there's no doubt that the motivation behind this bill is that political success from outsiders like us.
A couple of thoughts. Robbie, can you just repeat, so when we go back to the serious harms, did I hear you correctly that the first serious harm is integrity of the Commonwealth? Is that correct?
I highlighted the part, harm to electoral and referendum process. It's a bit small for me here, but Martin, read out that first bit.
So for the purpose of this schedule, serious harm is harm to the operational integrity of a Commonwealth, state, territory, or local government's electoral or referendum process. Talk about casting the net wide.
Indeed, indeed. So any question about election integrity, any question about the democratic system, you can't question the system. You've got to trust the Australian Electoral Commission, and you can't say anything about it. But the other key thing is, and you know, obviously we tend to focus on economic and political issues on this platform, and obviously with Robbie Barwick and the Citizens Party. But one final thought, Martin, is just to bring it from a whole different point of view. On social media, particularly on, say, LinkedIn, I see a lot of Australian women talking about Australian sport. And this whole issue of trans, the in terms of gender fluidity, transgender sort of issues, and can biological men participate in female sport? While I tend to be called a conspiracy theorist by a whole host of establishment voices, this legislation would have the capacity to silence millions of Australian women who object to biological men participating in terms of their sort of social groups, their sporting activities, and in terms of a whole host of, you know, in terms of their change rooms, etc. So while we tend to focus on the economic issues, because that's what we talk about by and large on this channel, this law has such wide reach. It could go, you know, it could be used by any group that would say we're being targeted or marginalized, and that could silence millions of people in the majority. And again, in a democracy, we have to have debate. And when you give ACMA and the minister all this power to silence people in the alternative media, you are going to shut down debate and viewpoints that the mainstream media won't report. I mean, it's so critical that people understand with the cash ban, no one. So there was only one journalist in Australia that was prepared to write a fair column about the cash ban, and that was Nassim Kadem at the ABC. But that was only after we did months of shows on this channel talking about that content. And I know for a fact that only in the last few weeks when I was in Melbourne and I did a show with Robbie, mainstream media journalists watched our content. And we have influenced some of the thinking in the mainstream media. So, you know, what we say, what we think, has an influence not only on citizens at large, it influences politicians. Politicians watch the show, journalists watch the show. We have historically been able to lead on a number of key issues, ASIC being in terms of the most in terms of the most recent one. And I fear, Martin, that if we do not stop the government in the next 7 days with this totalitarian piece of legislation, this channel, in the interest of the people and the valuable work that we've been doing for 6 years, it could all come to an end if the ruling elite in Canberra says we've heard enough of the lunatic John Adams and the renegade Robbie Barwick and the crazy Martin North, and we just don't want to hear their viewpoint anymore. I'm sure Joseph Longo and ASIC wants me to go away into the ether. And this legislation will give Longo the dream that he's been dreaming for 2 years.
Yeah, and I'll just make the point that if you go back into history, the church originally controlled the truth. And then there was somebody who said, well, hang on a moment, maybe the sun is not the center of the universe. And, you know, maybe there's an alternative way to think about the universe. And for many years, of course, those who had an alternative point of view were harshly treated, in some cases killed. What is truth is the critical issue here. And if you do believe that the government only is the source of truth, and everybody else is therefore to dance around the circle, then you're essentially understanding the way that the universe used to be, but not the way the universe is. The truth is we have to hold our politicians to account. That means being able to talk about the information that's out there and to pick it apart and, frankly, hold them to account. And I'll also make the final point, in my view, Robbie, the mainstream media are failing miserably in the role that they should be doing. They are very much part of the problem, to an extent captured as well. And without alternative paths to truth and alternative stories, the politicians get away with it. So this is a really critical issue.
Yep, the mainstream media likes to think of itself as the fourth estate. In reality, they, because it's the mainstream corporate media, actually, and that includes the government corporation, the ABC, but the media is very tightly concentrated in Australia. They've become gatekeepers for the existing system. You can get some interest in things on the side, right? And we should always try and do that. But by and large, the fundamental issues they've become gatekeepers on. And so they see the fact that John just referenced, we know mainstream media journalists have watched our show recently on ASIC. But what's their reaction? Their reaction is to defend ASIC, right? And therefore they see what we say on our show, which is over, that show is over 30,000 views from a couple of weeks ago. They see that as a threat to their narrative that they pump out. Now, some of the mainstream media are going to support stopping this because they will take a more philosophical position. But there's plenty in the mainstream media who are not going to. They should be all leading the charge to stop this bill. Instead, they're going to hope it gets waved through. Let me just make a few comments, just to in conclusion from me, about the politics of changing this, stopping this. I do think we actually have a very good chance. Unlike with the cash ban bill in 2019. When that was first, the first political comment we had on the bill was from the Labor opposition, which it was a government bill, Liberal government bill. Labor opposition first said they support it. And we were really behind the eight ball in stopping it, but we eventually stopped it. In this case, up till now, since this bill has been debated in 2023 and 2024, the Liberals have actually been quite strong in their condemnation of the bill. And when they condemned it in 2023, they were not alone. You had things like the Human Rights Commission, which is not known. This is not a conservative organization. They roundly condemned the bill, etc. So the Liberals were on safe political ground, and they condemned it. So the question is, what was the Liberals' what would the Liberals' response be to this new version of the bill? Well, so far their response has been very strong. So last Friday, David Coleman, the Shadow Communications Minister, condemned it roundly in the press, and essentially strongly indicated that they wouldn't support it. Now, and John had an exchange today with the National Party politician's office that maybe you should share, John. Which indicated that that particular senator who's on the inquiry was also was actually very upset that there's only 7 days here. So that indicates to me that they're strong in their opposition to it as well.
So one of the senators on the inquiry committee is Senator Cadell, who's a senator for New South Wales. So they're based in the Newcastle area. So I called the office this morning and spoke to one of the advisors, and the advisor was all across this issue. And they had told me this morning that Labor wanted less than 7 days in terms of the opportunity to put submissions, and the coalition had to fight just to get 7 days. So you know, when this advisor, Robbie Martin, was completely worked up. Quite an extraordinary conversation I had this morning. And so the fact that Labor wanted less than 7 days and the coalition had to fight for 7 days, it tells me that the fix is in. Labor wants this done because they've been told by their global masters that they want this legislation here. And we can talk about global masters because we do know that the Americans and the Europeans and the Brits want Australia to adopt this law. This is not a yearning of the Australian people. We don't have representative democracy anymore. I mean, look at Labor's primary vote. It's at 31%, the lowest since the election. Labor is failing to govern for the people, by the people and of the people, and they are implementing a whole host of initiatives and policies which are extreme radical, and a lot of them come from overseas. And Australians are rejecting this government in the millions. And we now have the latest news poll saying it's a 50-50 race, and this could be a one-term government, even though in the last 120 years we've only had one federal government that was thrown out after one term, and that was the Scullin government in 1931. So quite extraordinary circumstances we have at this moment. But you would have thought that after the Voice referendum, Albanese would have woken up to say, well, I need to actually start addressing the issues that the Australian people want. And yet, whether it's on ASIC or cost of living or all these other issues, they are ignoring the bread and butter concerns of the public, and they are pursuing a set of policies that no one wants.
Yeah, so given that we're coming to an election, that actually is going to work in our favour as well, because if the Liberals stick to their opposition, then it's going to come down to the Greens. And so what's very important is definitely the first message from the public has to be in the form of these submissions. Every single person watching this who shares our concern must send an email to that address by next Monday, declaring your opposition to this. You have to do it. It's really, really crucial. And then that'll be noticed by the coalition. And so if it's enough of a shock wave, that will consolidate their opposition. And it'll also be noticed by the Greens. And then there'll be time after that for the public, and people can start doing it now, reach out to Green senators. And there's only, I think there's four Greens MPs, but the Green senators are going to be crucial here. Start reaching out to Green senators and tell them you expect them to oppose this bill. And because if they oppose it, if they come out and oppose it as well, then it's dead. The government can't pass it, and we've defeated this piece of legislation. That's the pathway to victory here.
Well, I want to say, John, thanks. Robbie, thanks for coming on in this urgent post. This will go out both on the DFA and Interests of the People. All the links and things are below. And just to underscore, 7 days to save us from 1984, and it's all down to the voice of the people, but both in the interests of the people and for those watching on DFA, this is a really, really important thing. So please make your thoughts known to government and do it quickly.